I'm super excited to introduce you to our next guest. We've just been chatting here, and we're actually in a group together that has a conference twice a year, but we've never been at the conference at the same time. So I'm just so delighted to meet her and introduce you to her. Her name is Mary Morrissey, and she's made it her mission to empower people to create and live a life they love. And for over 50 years, she's been studying how to do that. And so she has tremendous expertise. She's the founder, and you can see it right in the back there. She's the founder of the Brave Thinking Institute, which is one of the world's premier provider of transformational training and coaching. Mary's got a new book coming up, which is going to be really exciting. I can't wait to read it. But she's also already written two best-selling books. One is called No Less Than Greatness, which I love that title. And the second one is Building Your Field of Dreams. We all remember that movie and how dreams do come true. And Mary is dedicated to making sure that she helps 1 billion dreams be achieved around the world. A billion dreams, Mary, that's a big, big goal in itself. But just even in talking with you and seeing your energy and just the way you light up, I know you're going to make that happen. So, Mary, it's really wonderful to have you here. Welcome to the Global Energy Healing Summit.
Thank you, Tom. I'm really happy to be here.
Yeah. So, first of all, a billion dreams. How did you even conceive that? That's pretty phenomenal.
Well, our dream is that as people learn this system of transformation, not only does their dream come through, but they help their children have their dreams come true, and the multiplication of that. And we gave ourselves a decade. So anybody who comes to anything we're doing, we say, this is our vision and the dream begins with you.
Yeah. So, well, that's so true. When someone learns how to do that, it doesn't stay within them, like their children, their friends, and even if they don't teach people the specific way of how they did it, just that inspiration of seeing somebody else do something, you're like, whoa, okay, I got to think a little bit bigger too. So the ripple effect, I'm sure, will be huge.
That's our goal.
Yeah. So you've done all sorts of cool things. You've got a PBS special. You've convened a 3-week long meeting with His Holiness, the Dalai Lama. You've met President Mandela, who's one of my heroes. You met him before he passed away. Just amazing, amazing life you've led. How did it all start? Where did your transformation start?
Well, even the idea that it was possible started for me as a teenager. I grew up in Beaverton, Oregon, which is a nice suburb of Portland, Oregon.
I was just there last week, actually. Yeah, doing a talk up there. Yeah.
Yeah, and I had a high school experience like most young girls dream about. My junior year in high school, I was class vice president, had a lead in the junior play on the drill team and homecoming princess. And at the end of that year, May 1, my high school boyfriend had come home on spring break. We dated 4 years. He went off to college, came home on spring break, and May 1, I'm having to tell my parents that I am now pregnant. Mm. End of my junior year in high school, my mother wept for me as if I had died. We had a very hasty 10-person wedding. A couple weeks later, the principal of the high school calls me to his office and says, "Are these rumors I'm hearing about you true?" And I said, "Well, if the rumors are I'm pregnant and married in that order, then yes, they're true." And he just put his head in his hands and he said, "Mary, you have great grades, terrific honors. You are not going to be allowed to return here for your senior year. It would be totally inappropriate for a pregnant girl to get mixed in with the normal girls." This is 1966. But if you want to get a high school diploma, which I did because I always dreamed of being a teacher, and I saw this as a detour, but not a dead end. It was just going to take me a little longer probably to accomplish it. And so he says, but if you want a high school diploma, there is a high school for people like you. It's across the river. It was in a part of Portland I hadn't been allowed to drive in after dark, and it is after dark. And it's where the pregnant girls and the delinquent boys go to high school. Hmm. That next fall, I drove across the river. I remember thinking as I'm walking up these steps, every girl here is either pregnant, has a baby. Every guy is some kind of delinquent. This is my new student body. Mm. And over the course of the summer, my best three girlfriends, we'd all been this group of four girls, very, very connected since fourth grade. Mothers got together and decided their daughters could no longer see me, as if what I had was contagious, I think. So my son was born in December. I graduated from Washington Evening High School in May. And in July, I was in an intensive care ward in my Portland hospital, having been diagnosed with fatal kidney disease. One kidney was totally destroyed with nephritis, kidney disease. The other had 50% destruction, active nephritis, and we don't have transplants. We don't have dialysis at this point. And it's you know, they're very sad, and but it's a death sentence. And they're telling me that maybe if we can get the blood toxin level in my body reduced enough to sustain a surgery to remove the right kidney, maybe I could have 6 months. And, you know, the what helped me over time as I looked back was I had the God of my upbringing was not a friendly place to go when you felt like you really screwed up. I'm sent to a school with delinquents. So clearly I'm the bad girl. My girlfriends can't see me anymore. So I'd been carrying this. And finally, the night before my surgery was going to happen, a woman walked in my room who identified herself as a visiting chaplain, and she got a list of surgeries that were going to happen the next day in order of seriousness. My name was at the top of the list. She said, did I want someone to pray with me? I was scared. I said, okay. She pulls her chair next to my bed, and she didn't do anything that seemed anything like I'd ever thought of as prayer. She said, would you be willing to tell me what's been going on in your life the last year or two? So I told her my story, at the end of which she looked at me compassionately, and she said, Mary, everything's created twice. I said, what are you talking about? She said, you actually know this. In fact, everybody knows it. Almost nobody knows the power of knowing this.
Yeah.
The bed you're laying on, the nightgown you're wearing, the sheet covering you, the walls, the ceiling, the floor, all the machinery that you're hooked up to. It had to be a thought, all of it.
Yeah.
It had to be a thought before it could be a thing. And then she said, I hear how much you love your little boy, but I also hear how much you've been hating yourself. You feel like you shamed your school, you shamed your family, you shamed yourself. And now that you're considering how everything is created twice, could you consider even the possibility that that toxic thinking could have something to do with the toxicity rampaging your body and threatening your very life? Nobody I knew thought this way, Tom. I mean, this is 1967.
It's one of my favorite quotes, by the way. I always say that too. Everything's created twice, first inside, then on the outside. So I love that. That was an angel that came to see you, it seems like.
She, as it turns out, she... and then she said, if you could live, what would you do? And I knew immediately. I said, I'd raise my little boy and I would become a teacher. And she said, so after the surgery, she asked me first, she said, think about it. There's infinite possibilities in this universe, infinite. So could you believe that there is a possibility that we could say a prayer and just sweep that toxicity out of you? And in the morning when they come get you, they say, well, you look so much better. We test you and then say that you're going to be fine. And I told her the truth. No, there wasn't any part of me that could believe at that point that she was going to say some words. And I believe way more in my pain and the what I would later call minor deities who had MD next to their names. This was a death.
Minor deities. I like it.
So then she said, okay, if you can't believe that, could you believe there's a possibility that we could sweep that up, all that toxicity, put it in the kidney that's going to get removed? When it gets removed, instead of getting worse, you just start slowly to get better and you actually get well. Could you believe that's possible? Remember, there's infinite possibilities. There has to be one possibility for this. Now, I didn't believe it, but I could tell it was an interesting thing. In that moment, I could believe, I could know, I knew that she believed it. And I was unconscious to do this, but I probably just believed in her belief. I said, well, maybe it's possible. And she said, so here's what we're going to do. And that she said, I'll do the prayer in just a minute. Now, remember, this is all before we had mind body clinics at Harvard and Stanford and UCLA and all the medical teachings, large medical teaching facilities. So she said, here's what's going to happen. You're going to have the surgery. When you get out of the surgery, your mind will be busy and your energy will be busy attending to the pain for however long it's compelling, day two, three. And then as the pain ebbs, your mind is going to want to go down the same well-worn paths of thinking that you've been doing. So here's what I want you to do. Whenever you notice a self-loathing thought, interrupt it and say, no, that left with the kidney, because we're going to take all that shame and all of that and put it in a kidney that's going to get removed.
Yeah.
No, that left with the kidney. She said, but it's, you know, the universe abhors a vacuum. So it's not enough to just say no. Then immediately I want you to imagine that you're walking up to a school. Mm-hmm. And you have a little warm little boy's hand. He's five. It's your little boy. You're walking up the steps into the school. There's a kindergarten teacher who's welcoming him to his kindergarten class. You give him a hug. He's happy. He goes inside and you hear the click, click, click of your heels around the corner. And there's your classroom. Your first classroom. Then fast forward and you're sitting in a big stadium or auditorium and you're seeing caps and gowns down on this, and there's your son's name is called to the stage. He holds up his diploma and you're cheering and so grateful not only to see him this, but for all the moments where you've helped him achieve this goal for himself. Then you're fast forward and you're sitting in the front row of a wedding. And that wedding is your son and he's marrying the love of his life. And you're the mother of the groom and your teaching career is flourishing.
Yeah.
She said, just keep doing that. Well, I, looking back, had to have been an unconscious competent. I just did what she told me to do. Yeah. I didn't understand the science behind it. I just did it. And a couple of weeks after they removed the kidney, I was still in intensive care, but my numbers started stabilizing. Mm. Finally, they said to me, well, we don't know if you might be getting a little bit more time and maybe if you'd like to go home for a week or two, you know, you will have to come back, but maybe. And so I went home in an ambulance. I couldn't get my head hardly off a pillow. Had to go to the urologist several times a week to get tested, but my numbers stabilized and then just started slightly improving. Mm-hmm. Until about 6 months after the surgery, I'm sitting in a conference room with the surgeon, the specialists, and all the charts, and they're saying, we have no science for why your one kidney is functioning as a whole perfect kidney. And the surgeon looked at me and he says, listen, I told your family that was gathered, that one, the kidney, it's now operating for you. It was withered. It was about 50% of the size, pockmarked all over with nephritis. We don't know if this will last, and then they moved me instead of several times a week to coming every once a week and then once a month and then once every 3 months. And that was 55 years ago.
You are 55 years later. That's awesome. I love that.
And I wasn't interested. It was interesting. I'm young. I'm just happy to be better. But I wasn't interested in, well, how did this actually occur?
Yeah. Yeah.
Until I was in undergraduate school just 2 or 3 years later. And a series of things occurred in October of 1971. Mm-hmm. And I began to see patterns. I began to recognize some things. And then I became a thirsty sponge for everything I could find in the field of transformation. Yeah. That's why I sought out. It was a dream of mine to create. I just wanted to meet His Holiness and ask him a question about transformation and what I saw happen in him. That's what took me to Cape Town, to Nelson Mandela. I was thinking, you know, one day, you know, here's a guy who gets sentenced to life, to 27 years in hard labor.
Unjustly, right? Yeah.
And, well, he became violent. In his story, when he was nonviolent, he saw his buddies be killed, then he became violent. Sent to prison for fighting something that we all
agree. Yeah, that was unjust.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And yet he gets out of prison before he dies.
Yeah.
Becomes president of the country that sentenced him to life. Who on our planet does that? One guy.
And forgave everybody. Yeah.
I wanted to ask him, what happened in you? What was happening in your thinking that produced this result? And he knew exactly what it was. He talked about climbing the slope of thought. Mm-hmm. And how the guy that went to prison could never have become president.
Yeah.
That's who I had to become.
Yeah.
So
one of the things that I also love is that I tell people you're under no obligation to be the exact same person you were 5 minutes ago. You were not the same person that went in that hospital. And that's such a great story you started off with, because, you know, this is Global Energy Healing Summit. Now, some people, they need to heal their minds and their thoughts and, you know, create more happiness. But there's some people watching you right now, Mary, who have chronic illness or have some scary diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And exactly what you said is what we want them to know, right? It's a point in time right now. Someone might be saying you've got this or whatever, but but there's a role you played in creating it. And it's typically a message to you to shift who you are so that you can get beyond it the same way that you did in shifting. Just an amazing story. And that person that came into your life, I mean, that truly was an amazing being that showed up for you and got you to, you know, to start to see things different. And here you are, you know, 55 years later. Just what a great story. I love it. I absolutely love that story.
So as I got interested in how does it really occur, that real mm-hmm. transformation, you know, what happened with me is my first, it was, and then as I began to study more, I began to see the patterns of transformation. I studied all the world's religions. I went to seminary. I got a master's degree in counseling psychology, got mm-hmm. very interested in studying the new science. Max Helbert out of Stanford, the holographic universe and quantum field theory. And I began to see patterns of what we call reality occurs.
What we call reality, that's a good way of looking at it, yeah.
Over the many, many years of working with clients, helping them transform a set of results into another more life-giving set of results. That's my work. One of the things I've learned about that health is wanting to be well is not a big enough dream. Mm-hmm. You health, when she didn't say to me, would you love to be well? She said, right. If you could live, what would you do with your life?
Yeah.
I would raise my little boy and I'd become a teacher. Mm-hmm. Then she helped me shape that into a vision.
Yeah.
And it had stair steps to it. He's 5, he's 18, he's getting married.
Yeah.
And my teaching career, she didn't say, so, you know, she didn't say who was going to babysit him while I went to school to become a teacher. When none of the how is in it. And that's a tough thing for people who aren't used to what I call dream building.
Yes.
People have dreams, but the science of it is in the building. And it's an inside, as you said, Tom, it's an inside out process.
Yeah. What I love about what you do too is, you know, there really are no limits in what you teach. You know, people can dream as big as they want to, and you probably encourage that. So you don't say, oh, no, that don't dream that big. Just like that lady that came to you, that chaplain, by most people's standards, because most people are firmly entrenched in the physical world where they're in the physical world, there are limits, right? You know, if you're just in the physical world, but she brought you into that non-physical world where there were no limits and where you could create anything you want. And I know that's probably a lot of your work is getting people out of that entrenched reality. Another quote that I often say is average conforms to reality. Greatness creates a whole new reality. And you're helping people step into that. So I just absolutely love your work. So, where do you start? Where do you tell people to start when they are stuck in whatever reality that they're in, where they don't like it, but they don't see any hope or any chance? Where do you start to guide them?
We're all trained. We, as humans, we're all trained to live what I call condition-based living.
Yeah.
An idea comes. I would love it if I could. Well, where's the money going to come from? And then we go immediately to conditions as the decider for who we can be and what we can do.
Yeah.
As I studied all of this, I began to realize that what you have right now has nothing to do with your vision or your dream. That I define a dream this way. I mean, you can have wonderful goals, really even worthy goals, and you know what to do to bring them about. You just haven't done it yet. Mm-hmm. That's not a dream. By definition, a dream is something that, as you imagine being the person having that life, it is so life-giving and you have no idea how to bring it about. Because that requires of us then to partner with a higher being, a higher self beyond yeah. just the self we know, that we're connected. We are, in my experience and in my deep knowing, we are not just physical beings, we are spiritual beings.
Yes.
Having a human experience.
Yes.
That human experience is malleable. Yeah. It's an effect. It's like the what the movie you see on the screen doesn't start on the screen.
Yeah.
It starts, there's light and you lay down film, and that film is the thinking and the yeah. response. And most people just never get supported in creating in their minds and on paper what they would really, really love. So yeah. I encourage people to put three things together as a beginning. You ask, what's the beginning? Number one, notice what you're noticing.
Mm-hmm.
No, and then turn that noticing. Right now, you can notice your feet, you can notice your knees, mm-hmm. the top of your head, chin. Mm-hmm. Your noticer will go anywhere you direct it.
Right.
Most of us notice what's missing or what's wrong. You can turn that noticing to noticing your longing and your discontent.
Mm.
Where in your life, there are four main areas where we're all creating results anyway. We yeah. have health results right now. You can measure them. We have relationship results right now, whether they're fulfilling or tangled mm. or disruptive.
Yeah.
You can see the results in your relationship quadrant of life.
Yeah.
Or vocation, what you're doing, whether you're earning income with it or not, it's what you're doing with your time and talent. How fulfilling is it? How meaningful? Does it have purpose in it? Do you feel significant or significance in the work that you're doing? And so that always has other things that it creates, frustration if you're not. So you've got health, relationship, vocation. And the other one, the fourth one, is our freedom quadrant. How much time freedom, how much money freedom,
mm-hmm.
and or not.
Mm-hmm.
So as people start to notice what they're noticing, I take, if I'm doing a 3-day event with them or a one-on-one client. So let's talk about in the area of your health, where's your longing and where's mm-hmm. your discontent?
Yeah.
This, and I believe those are two signals actually from our, from spirit, from our soul.
Mm-hmm.
It sends signals and it's, oh, and when you hear it in your own head though, I'm just so tired of trying to, you know, want to get up in the morning, you know, I'm, if you've got health issues, you know, I'm tired yeah. of the pain, you know, you have discontent. And if only I could go run, play with my kids,
yeah.
you know, and, you know, or play basketball with them or,
right.
Or I'm so tired of not having enough money to get through the month and figuring it out, always trying to that whole struggle. I'm tired of the struggle. I would love it if, so those two sides, longing and discontent. And then you ask yourself, so now that you've noticed longing and discontent in each of these areas,
mm-hmm.
and you pick the one that's the most painful usually to transform yeah. first.
Which is probably scary for people, right? To pick the one that's most painful.
But it is causing the most pain and it'll affect yeah. you. As we lift that one up, it'll rise all things.
I agree.
Yeah. You know, I actually invite them to not only notice that it's painful, but how long has it been going on?
Yeah.
And what's it costing you to not close that gap between?
Mm-hmm. Great question.
Yeah. And then, so now I'm noticing my longing and discontent. What do I do with that? Ask yourself this question. What would I love in the area of health? Not what do I, and it's a very different question than mm-hmm. what do I think I can have? What do the doctors say I can have? Yeah. What does this disease, what happens with most people, like it's in charge? So what would I love in health? What would I love in my relationships?
Yeah.
So you can't create something you don't define. No dream house ever got built that didn't have a good, strong blueprint.
Right. Architect
could actually read and a builder could work from.
Yeah.
And it's an expression of what's going inside an individual who wants a dream house. It's the same thing with a dream life.
Yeah. I love that. You know, so many people around health, when they get a diagnosis, they immediately run to the internet and see, you know, okay, what's going to happen? And you just said, don't do that, right? You know, what would you love to happen? What happens to the average person or how long they live or what are all the symptoms.
I don't encourage people to be afraid of information or take a look at it, but I encourage them to know that you are more than that.
Yeah.
Right now, this is a fact. I mean, you don't ignore a diagnosis. Mm-hmm. But definitely don't accept a prognosis.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not brought that. Those are statistics.
Exactly.
Statistics only apply to groups. They never apply to individuals.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And you're not that. You are more than that.
Yeah. I always tell people, like, if you're going to look up something around a condition that you have, find someone who overcame it, study them, or find a bunch of people and just like be inspired by that, not what happens to the average person that's stuck in reality.
Exactly.
Yeah. So challenges do show up. You had an enormous challenge at 18, 19 years old, however old you were, when your kidneys were not functioning. But obviously, we can all see how that shaped you into who you are today. You wouldn't be doing this today had that not happened, probably. I mean, maybe you would.
I agree.
So how do you coach people on dealing with setbacks, adversities along the way? What do you tell them about those?
Yeah, they're, adversities are not stop signs.
Yeah.
Qualifiers. They really are. The thing, is it big? Is it little? We decide.
Mm-hmm.
Is this going to stop me, or is this going to be a stepping stone I'm going to get on top of and use the learning that, you know, I'm not going to have something happen in my life that seems bad.
Yeah.
Not get the learning. And I'm a believer. When Napoleon Hill studied successful people and their mindset on problems, on difficulties, on setbacks, one of the things he codified was that every one of them believed that there was a seed of an equal or greater benefit. No matter the heartbreak, no matter the loss, there's a seed of an equal or greater benefit in this than it appears.
Yeah.
But like any seed, it has to be found and planted and nurtured and grown.
Yeah. And the quicker you find that, the less pain you have. That's what I've taught my kids now. And, you know, I've learned through many years is the quicker I can, even when it's in the midst of it happening, going, all right, I don't like this, but let's milk it. What can I get from this? How can I grow into something better?
Yes.
And I don't fear it as much.
Yeah,
that's awesome. So we've talked about becoming a dream builder. How do people take advantage of what you have to offer? Where can they go? And what resources do you have that we can direct them to? Because I know a lot of people are listening to this going, I want what she's teaching. Where can they go, Mary?
Well, is this where we'd like to give a gift, Tom?
Oh, let's give a gift. That'd be great.
Yeah, I created a meditation on crafting your own vision, and I'll ask questions. And it's just a gift from us. Tom mentioned I'm the founder of Brave Thinking Institute. And so this is a way that we can make sure you get a gift from us on how to help you craft, even if you think you know your vision.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say about 50% of the clients that come our way, come to our conferences and seminars, 50% would say, well, I don't really know what my vision, my vision is. And it isn't really that they don't know, we just haven't been led through the process. The minute we do the process, and
they know it.
And then it becomes clear. Yeah.
So it's inside them, but this meditation that you're going to give to people that helps them kind of know their vision even better.
You'll have clarity in the same way you want a really clear vision. Because once you have clarity, that dictates a vibration.
Yeah.
Same way you're going to see the pictures on your TV that you're tuned to with your remote control.
It tunes
to a frequency and you have the pictures. If you're tired of some of the pictures in different parts of your life and you would love other results, we ought to change the frequency. And that starts with a vision, a clear vision, not of what you think you can have, what's not just a little better, but what you would absolutely love. Because there would be enough fire.
Yeah.
Really low. You can have water that gets really hot, but unless it hits the boiling point, it doesn't have a phase change where it goes from liquid to gas.
Right.
You want results to be different, we have to have a phase change.
And when it comes from within, it does have such incredible power. When you're trying, a lot of people try and, you know, set their goals by what someone else has, and then they chase it and they realize it's not that fulfilling. Your process really helps it come out from within you where there's this enormous power just waiting to be unleashed. So where do people go, Mary, to be able to get this meditation?
Make sure I'm giving it too quickly. You would go to www.bti, Brave Thinking Institute, bti.com/global energy healing.
Okay, great. So everybody, www.bti.com/global energy healing. It's a gift from Mary to you. I'm going to go there and I'm going to get it. and everyone should go get that and go through that meditation and really find out what's inside of you. Bring your dreams to life. Mary, do you feel like there are limits for people, or do you just get them to think so big where they go through most of the limits that they tend to think they have?
Here's what I think. Ultimately, we're dealing with the infinite.
Yes.
But we're not infinite. So it's what we can believe, actually. Mm-hmm. You know, I have clients who, you know, the most they've earned, let's say, it's somebody who's earned $100,000, $150,000 a year. And they'll say, I'm earning $5 million a year. I'm earning $500 million a year.
Yeah.
And they do it. Yes. But not with the mindset that generates 150.
Yes.
Don't flip from 150 to 500 million, usually. I mean, right. In my experience.
Could happen, but it's rare.
So let's double. Let's take your annual income and double it.
Yeah.
And then there's a process for that versus, you know, and keep that in mind. If that's what you really want, keep it in mind. You don't have to surrender that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I love it. Well, you've helped so many people achieve their dreams. Thank you so much for being on with us. You've shared some real wisdom and some inspiration. Just even hearing you talk, I know about your story of, you know, being in a condition where you were told you at best you had 6 months to live, and here you are 55 years later, right? You are a walking billboard.
On health. I've had to overcome all kinds of things, Tom. Flying the same system. I guess the last thing I would say to your wonderful group is there's an art and science to transforming results.
Yeah.
The art is in the vision. You have to know what you really want. And the science is in the vibration. You can't get to a dream. You actually have to come from it.
I love that. Wow. What a great way to end today. Last question I'll ask you is, you spent some time with the Dalai Lama. What was the biggest lesson you learned from him? Mm.
I, as a young teacher training, I got very interested in his work, and I read everything I could find, his books. I attended one of his events at a big conference center. It was like 15,000 people, and I'm way up in nosebleed suits, and he wouldn't know me from anybody.
Yeah.
But I remember being totally amazed. Here he is. He's exiled as a kid out of his country. Yeah. He spends his life fighting for the freedom of Tibet. Mm-hmm. And the Chinese government is seeking to stamp out this 5,000 year beautiful tradition.
Yeah.
And I could hear no bitterness, no revenge in anything he was saying.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, if you're going to give anybody on the planet a little pass for having some hurt, some resentment about what's happened, and even today in Tibet, if a Chinese official overhears a Tibetan person saying out loud, Om Mani Padme Hum, which is effectively, if you're in the United States and you say, our Father who art in heaven, or Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one, they and their family are incarcerated for the rest of their life. They consider it sedition to the Chinese government.
Yeah.
And I could find no bitterness in him. And so I just started dream building. I thought, you know, what would I love? I would love to have a cup of tea with this guy and ask him, how do you do it?
Yeah.
You have these facts, and yet this is how you are in them. How do you do that? And, I just kept every now and then imagining sitting, have a cup of tea with him. Fast forward, it's probably 12 years. I get a call from the office of Tibet. and he was taking some interviews. He was looking for someone to help facilitate meetings with world leaders that he would have over the course of 7 years, three mm-hmm. different week-long meetings.
Yeah.
And his brother had heard me speak at the Tibetan or the Christian Buddhist conference that I was invited to speak at one time. And I'm speaking about transcendentalism, which is out of Concord. There were two revolutions that happened in the United States. One, the revolution of the freedom for this country, the other, a revolution of thinking. And they'd heard me speak. So then I get this invite to come to Tibet and take this interview with him. Mm-hmm. I go in, he's got some tea, and they're pouring water tea, and I'm going, oh my gosh. And then as I answered his questions, and he said, do you have a question for me? And I said, I do have a question for you. And I asked my question, and how do you do this? And he goes, oh, friends, easy love, easy forgive. Ah, but we all have sacred friends. Very, very difficult, very, very difficult. He says, without Chinese government doing exactly what they do, I would never have had to evolve my heart to be bigger than the pain they bring.
Ah, beautiful. Wow.
And they have a Tibetan practice called bodhicitta for going to compassion no matter what. And he said, it doesn't mean that we don't do everything we can do, but we're not going to do it in resentment. We're not going to do it in...
Yeah.
Everyone has friends, easy love, easy forgive. Ah, but we all have sacred friends.
Yeah, beautiful.
That's where the metal meets the road, you know?
And forgiveness is so healing too. So what a great way to end today. Mary, you are a shining light. So great meeting you. And thank you so much for being with us today.
Inviting me. I really appreciate it.